We are wrapping up week 9 of the new Buckmaster Show. Soon it won't be new. We'll drop the new after week 10. How about that? I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show for Friday, March the 4th, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL 1330, and we're always on the World Wide Web at our fine website, buckmastershow.com. On Fridays, the Buckmaster Show has the Friday Focus. We begin with a newsmaker in studio with questioning by myself and one of our Reporters Roundtable regulars. This week it's Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. This week's Friday Focus features a newsmaker interview with Democrat Karen Ulick, Tucson City Council member representing Ward 3. And if you have a question for Councilwoman Ulick, call the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508. Councilwoman, good to see you. Thanks
nice
for being with us.
Nice to see you, Bill. Thanks so much.
We want to begin with the news out of Phoenix about guns in public buildings. How would that impact public buildings in the city of Tucson?
Well, it would impact us on a number of levels. In order to comply with the law, clearly we would incur some expense, which is a challenge in and of itself right now. But beyond that, the mayor and council is concerned about anything that would suppress public participation. We have open hearings. We have, I think, lively and substantive debate on the issues, and often have the mayor and council chambers packed with citizens seeking to participate in their local democracy. And safety is a real concern. I mean, we have Girl Scout troops and Boy Scout troops and faith community folks coming to lead us in prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. And I can't help but be concerned that there are people out there who might think twice about coming to express their views to the mayor and council out of a concern for public safety. So it's disappointing to me. I think that a good point has been made by the media from a number of different corners that the state has some real pressing issues to address, economic issues, budgetary issues, and somehow these kinds of things are floating to the top of the agenda, and it's confusing to me.
So even though the law is being liberalized and that people will be able to bring guns, do you really think that that's going to be an issue, that people will now, oh, there's this new law, I can bring my gun to the council and they will do it? And how does someone, a legal gun owner, bringing a gun into a public building make the area or the meeting perhaps unsafe?
Well, I think that the perception of decreased safety is key. And the fact that that people who would seek to bring their guns in aren't known other than oftentimes we don't know anything about the individuals other than that they've expressed the desire to bring their weapon in. And again, for Tucson, it's a sensitive issue because clearly we're still grieving, we're still healing, trying to heal from horrific events in January. We're seeing dramatic cuts in behavioral health spending and investment at the state level. And so there are people out there on the fringes, not only who would seek to bring weapons in, but who may not handle that responsibility appropriately. So I think to brush off the notion that people will be afraid to come to public buildings is wrong. I think
while we're on the topic of the legislature, there's some legislatures they've decided that they really wanted to be city councilmen and women, and they've proposed a number of bills that would interfere with the way cities operate. Can you give us a rundown on what some of those bills are and how you think they might affect the city?
Yes. There are bills that have been floated that would, for example, dictate to the city of Tucson whether and how to handle personnel issues, including the hiring and firing of the city manager. There are issues related to water and sewer and maintenance and ownership of those systems, which have been purchased by the taxpayers locally. There are, as we all know, last session, addition, there were issues around elections and how local elections should be handled. The list is...
And there's the privatization of businesses, including the trash business.
Right, which would require local governments to put out to bid to the private sector many of the services we provide. And in order to have those processes be fair, that's an expensive proposition in and of itself. In fact, I think we would spend more in handling those processes appropriately than we could possibly save by privatizing here and there in an area where a bid might come in a little lower. And the other issue is that there are some systems that we control, water, waste, environmental services, that simply should not be lost in terms of control to the private sector. These are issues. And, you know, I do want to say that we have to, at the mayor and council level, exercise the same kind of restraint that we want out of the state legislature. We're very circumspect about trying to dictate the agenda of the state legislature or to, unless there's a clear local nexus and a local impact, we try and stay out of their business. But I have welcomed very specifically members of the legislature to move into the city Tucson limits, run against me if they want to, but they're trying to do my job, which means they are not doing their jobs.
It's now about 13 minutes past the hour. Karen Ulick is with us, Tucson City Council member representing Ward 3, and also questioning Ms. Ulick is Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com. Water rate hike, I know it came up before the council last week. I think it was 8.5%, something like that. Why is that necessary? Why should the customers be burdened with that?
It's a very important public hearing process, Bill, and I really hope that your listeners will consider weighing in on this, because embedded in this water rate hike is not only water service, but water security. For the first time, Tucson Water would draw down our full allocation of cap water. And we are unique in the state, and in fact, in many respects nationally, we can store water in our reservoirs underground. And so our desire is to draw down about 4 months additional water supply over the coming 3 years so that we have a backup supply of water in case of drought or any interruption of service through the Central Arizona Project. I think it's good planning. I think most Tucsonans want water security in addition to good water service.
Kind of like a rainy day fund for water.
It really is. And I think, you know, we are doing so much right now to ensure that security for this region. And it matters in terms of economic development and so many other things. In addition, much of the power that we're using in the Avra Valley system is now solar. And so we have really created a system that can provide that backup that I think the residents of Tucson want to see us invest in. And to me, the rate increase is modest given the fact that we move towards such significant goals. But we do have a public hearing on these increases, and we could drop the security elements. I think ratepayers are going to want to see us invest that resource.
There's been some question about the customer service. Yeah. They've been flooded with calls over that rebate. It's probably best to go online if you would like the rebate, but still, it is kind of concern. It's a concern to the customers.
Huge.
When they're waiting 1 or 2 hours.
Well,
that's ridiculous.
Very significant. And one thing we've debated, and I've advocated that the employee furloughs that we've imposed in our enterprises like water and garbage services, that if the utilities can handle lifting those, it would in essence increase our staffing levels. There's also a sentiment out there that no, you lift them for everybody or you keep them for everybody in order to be more fair. So it's a tough question, but it's a concern that I've spoken directly with the city manager and the water director about.
In 2006, when the Regional Transportation Authority was passed, there was a sense that all the previous bickering that had gone on and kind of held the region back that went on between the county and the city, maybe those days may be behind us, and we were looking at possibly more regional cooperation, and particularly with water, that there was going to be a creation of a regional water authority that would create some efficiencies throughout the system. But now we're seeing some bickering coming back between the city and the RTA and the city and the county over roads. Is that a reflection of the difficult financial times, or is the bloom off the regionalism rose, you think?
Actually, I think the opposite is true. The City Board of Supervisors and City Mayor and Council adopted a joint planning process for water and wastewater that has, I think, broken through the prospect of water wars that was looming over us. Right. We now share a plan for the region, and already we have in Tucson been able to make great strides in adopting a water service map so people know where we will and will not extend service. We have set aside some water for the environment, effluent, which was not happening. And the most significant thing in my mind is that we are now leveraging Tucson Water's infrastructure to wheel water on a wholesale level to our partners in the region, Oro Valley, the Pasquayaki tribe. We are settling these agreements to the benefit of everybody in the entire region. And that's through a partnership with the county board of supervisors and everybody else. So in water, we're making great strides. With the RTA, I think that, quite honestly, we're struggling some. I think there's an issue about who controls the transit system. 90% of the riders are City of Tucson residents. I'm willing to give up control as long as 90% of the vote, or there's some kind of weighted voting that is present in Maricopa County on their transportation board. So I'm simply looking for proportionate representation, which I think people would expect for an important system like that.
It's 18 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. This would be a good time to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk with Councilwoman Ulick about the downtown arena proposal resurfacing and how her sales revenue is doing. Maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel on that financial situation. We will be back. This is the Friday Focus with Karen Ulick and Mark Evans on the Bill Buckmaster Show.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
Minutes past the hour. This is Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show. Mark Evans is with me from TucsonCitizen.com and our Friday Focus newsmaker, Democrat Karen Ulick, Tucson City Council member representing Ward 3. Councilwoman, how are the sales revenues starting to look? Are things starting to slowly turn around in the city?
They are. I joke with people that I never thought I'd say that I'm so relieved the economy is flatlined. But the truth is that's actually good news right now, that not only have we leveled off, but we're all seeing an uptick. I think our sales tax revenues in 2010 were about $359 million, and it looks like we can conservatively budget $366 for this fiscal year. So there's some adjustment, and of course, we're focused on 2012. We will be responsible in our projections, though, and I think we don't. We've seen very generous projections of 7% growth, and we'll probably go to 3 or 4%, probably half as optimistic as our U of A economists and the state seem to be. But that's just to make sure we're being responsible with how we land things.
So what are you going to do with the money? We've gone through 4 years of year after year of budget crisis, budget gaps, just trying to keep up with the falling economy. You've cut everywhere. I mean, you're running the city with the staffing of, I think, you're down to 1998 levels. As the money might start to come back in and stabilize, who gets made whole first? Where will you start to put that money back into the city? And what lessons have you learned about the way the city spends its money that might change now the way you're going to allocate that money versus the way you were doing it back in the halcyon days of the
Speaking of course, for myself only, I think that it's very clear that all of us are sharply focused on the core services that we provide to the community, and those are called out in the charter. Those include parks and recreation, transportation, public safety, and of course the enterprises like water and sewer and garbage, which don't rely on general funds. I think the lesson for me is to make sure that as the economy recovers, we must again create healthy reserves. We did that in 2005 and 2006. We were so fortunate to have 10% set aside, and it helped us navigate this crisis. We need to rebuild the reserves immediately, and as revenues tick up, invest in those core service areas and keep a close eye on areas that are not core services provided by local government. We have to make sure that if there's any restoration or growth in those other areas, that there's a very clear rationale and significant public support, because we can't we can't slip on those core elements of what we're to provide to the public. You'll see that in our budget process. You'll see us looking at that, and we're also already working on a 5-year financial plan that lays out how we prioritize, you know, services and build back up our reserves.
The idea of a downtown arena has resurfaced with the University of Arizona considering studying the idea. What are some of your thoughts on downtown and the arena?
Well, just in very general terms, two things. I think it would be really great news to have the U of A as our partner. I mean, the enthusiasm about university sports for good reason and the Wildcats is enormous, and I think that partnership would be just positive, and I don't even see a downside. The second thing I will tell you is I don't think the city should be in the middle or the mix. I think that if the university is a partner, I will advocate that we have a private company that's accustomed to working with universities and stadiums and arenas do that work. It's a new element that we don't currently have in the mix. And I just think that we ought to learn from our challenges with regard to things like the downtown hotel and even downtown development. Whenever we've tried to be the broker and the developer per se, we haven't done real well. And quite frankly, it's not our job. It's not our expertise, and I think we should acknowledge that reality.
And we're big backers of local business here on the Buckmaster Show, and you're seeing what's happening downtown. Local businesses are stepping up and leading the way down there. It's not really government, is it?
No, it's not. And as you know, I've been a big promoter of local businesses. Local First Arizona is now present in Tucson and has over 200 local members, a great business association. It really speaks well to the Tucson community that local businesses step up and that consumers support local businesses.
What's the status of the city's lawsuit against the state that tried to change the way the city does its elections? Because it could affect how you redistrict in the next 2 years, wouldn't it?
I have not heard any update on that. We had anticipated hearing before this 2011 election cycle, and that hasn't occurred. So I haven't heard anything.
And you're doing this election the way you've done all the previous elections.
Right, because the courts haven't made their decision.
Less than a minute and a half, Karen Ulick. Walmart at Elkhorn, what's the update on that quickly?
It was a deal that was struck in 2004, and the city, quite honestly, legally and otherwise, has to abide by its agreements. I think all of us are doing our best to bring pressure on Walmart and Elkhorn to make sure that they accommodate some of the serious concerns of surrounding neighborhoods. A 24-hour facility in the mall is going to have an impact. The way that they've configured it will have traffic impacts. And so, we're working with the neighborhoods to try and negotiate the best deal possible. But quite honestly, Walmart, in my view, has not been particularly cooperative. They don't tend to take community concerns into account when they plan their big boxes. They just want in, and they want to muscle their way in and get their market share. So it's a tough one, but it's something that was signed, sealed, and delivered in 2004.
Karen Ulick, we're about out of time. Mark, you had unless it's a yes or no question.
No, it's not.
It isn't. Okay,
Karen, I never ask yes or no. Questions.
I know you do. Karen Ulick, thank you very much for being with us on the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Coming up on 30 minutes past the hour, the Friday Radio Roundtable is next. Stay with us.
Listen to this.
You're tuned in to Tucson's best choice for local talk.
I love it, huh? Little back and forth, witty repartee.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. A witness tells CNN at least 15 people were killed and 200 were hurt in the Libyan city of Zawiya today. Witnesses say tear gas and rubber bullets are being used on anti-government protesters in the capital of Tripoli. The confrontation happened after weekly prayers. Senator John McCain says he thinks the U.S. should consider a no-fly zone over Libya.
It is not a major challenge, at least in my assessment, of being able to impose a no-fly zone.
Unemployment fell to its lowest level in almost 2 years last month. The new government report shows 192,000 jobs were added. Analyst Todd Harwood says the number is deceiving.
It just looks to me that, you know, certain people in certain sectors have just given up looking, so that would naturally bring the number down a little bit.
The suspect in the Arizona shooting spree, Jared Loeffner, could face a new indictment today. The announcement expected from the U.S. Marshals Service. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Hi, Mrs. Miller. I have the cookies you ordered.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, you have 5 boxes of Snacker Bobbles, 3 Little Yummers, and your total is $0.
You mean they're free?
Yep, they're free.
Well, it's a pleasure doing business with you.
Free is better. Do your simple federal return for free at TurboTax.com. It's free to prepare, free to print, and free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted brand of tax software in America. Visit TurboTax.com today. Trusted brand claim based on Intuit Commission survey, August 2010.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tanca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Minutes past the hour, and it is time for the Friday Radio Roundtable. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable, Mark Evans of TucsonCitizen.com, Jim Nintzel of the Tucson Weekly, and Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star. Jim Nintzel, let's begin with you. Jim is at home today. He has some issues, could not come to the radio station, but you write in your range column in the Tucson Weekly that there seems to be a slight improvement, but a long way to go with the Arizona economy.
Yeah, the tax collections are looking a little bit better for the last 6 months. We've exceeded the previous period in the same year, 1 year prior. And, you know, that's not very much, but it's better than we've done for several years now, where we've actually been on the decline. by that factor. But so there's a little bit of brightness in the economy, and I think it goes a long way towards disproving this notion that any kind of tax increase automatically results in a downward economy, because we've had an increase in the sales tax statewide that the voters put in place. We've had the increase in property taxes. But there is a lot of weakness. You know, a lot of homes, as many as half the homes in the state, are underwater. And that's true in neighboring states as well. So we really have a lack of mobility among people. They can't move here. They can't move away from here without suffering significant losses. And so we're far from out of the woods.
And our whole economy is geared toward the growth train, or at least in the Phoenix area. And the Phoenix is still in serious economic trouble, the Phoenix metro area, because they still have hundreds of thousands of foreclosed homes out there. They just last year set another record for foreclosures as they continue to circle the drain up there and put that downward pressure on home values in Phoenix. And the Phoenix metro area, which is the economic engine for almost the entire state, won't recover until that housing issue in Phoenix settles down. And the predictions are from the economists is that's going to take at least another couple of years. Plus, you've got the other report that was in the Star that Howie Fisher had yesterday, which was that the unemployment figure was actually worse than what we thought it was. It was
over
actually 10%.
Yeah, over 10%.
Yeah, so we're looking at a jobless recovery. So I think what we're seeing is some improvement in consumer attitudes. They don't feel as fearful they're going to lose their jobs, and so they're loosening up a little bit with their spending, and we're going to see some upticks in sales, taxable sales. But in terms of the overall improvement in the economy, I still think we have, like Jim said, quite a long road to hoe.
And in the story about the idea that the unemployment figures for Arizona were actually worse than we thought, the state official in there was saying, well, productivity is up. There's only so much you can get out of a worker, and then they're going to just get fed up and leave. And I'm thinking, where are they going to go?
Right.
It's not like there's open jobs everywhere where people can just say, you know what, I'm not going to put in that extra time and just get a new job. So that just sort of signaled to me that things are not looking good, and that the outlook is not positive.
Just as a quick aside, that jobs report came out of the Commerce Department, which has now been eliminated by the legislature.
Hey, Jim Nintzel, the Senate Majority Leader's fight with his former girlfriend generating, there was a front page story in the Arizona Republic yesterday. What's the latest on that?
And really generating headlines across the country. I mean, this was the sort of thing, you know, I think TV news in particular, but also the folks out there in the audience, you know, have a tough time paying attention to some of these crazy bills that are being passed up there. But once your Senate Majority Leader gets in a fight with his girlfriend on the side of the highway, and she gets hauled off to jail, and he skips out and says, "Oh, I'm immune to arrest because of my legislative position," and he goes on the radio and says things like, "Oh, you know, the only reason I mentioned that I was a state lawmaker was so they knew that I wasn't just some schmo off the street." And makes it sound like he's somebody special.
Suddenly people who had not cared about what's going on at the legislature are interested.
Yeah, they're tuning in for sure. And this is Scott Bungard, who actually had a legislative career some time ago and is making something of a comeback. Got reelected to the Senate and then quickly moved into Senate Majority Leader because he's very close to Russell Pierce. Just got into some kind of altercation. Police reports tell two different stories from both of the people involved in this, but when they did get pulled over, they didn't get pulled over, they pulled over themselves because things were being thrown out the window of the car. They pulled over to retrieve them, got into a scuffle on the side of the road. Police showed up, and like I said, the woman ended up going to jail. And Scott Bungard went home and then put together a press conference to talk about what had happened while she was still cooling her heels. So he's coming across as a real cad in this situation. We'll see where it develops from here, but I think he has spun this in about the worst way possible ever since it happened.
And it's interesting, Sarah Garrett-Gasson, that Russell Pierce, his reaction was
basically, well, I know what happened, and Scott Bungard is the victim in all of this, and he's the victim of bad publicity and oh, poor Scott Bungard.
Russell Pierce has his own domestic violence
yes,
problems.
Yes, he does.
Mark Evans, shouldn't he, under Arizona law, have been charged in a domestic dispute like this? Or,
yeah,
or does this immunity...
Several years ago, I think more than a decade ago, Arizona changed its domestic violence laws. There's really no domestic violence charge. It's an aggravation to a charge. So you'd be arrested for assault, and then you'd get an domestic violence aggravation. And under state law, police... pretty much have to make the arrest because in those situations, especially with battered women, they would likely then drop the charges as part of that whole battered women syndrome and that whole horrible culture of domestic violence. And it was a way to make more or less the state the victim and allow the officer to make the arrest no matter what if he believed that there was an assault and that it involved a domestic issue. So my guess is Bungard didn't get out of this. However you say his name,
Bungard.
He didn't get out of this. He's likely, when the legislative session ends, he's still probably going to get a charge if the county attorney in Maricopa County does his job properly.
Jim, final word on the Bungard thing, and then we'll move on to guns.
Well, I just think it's another sign that the group of lawmakers we have up there are probably the worst we have ever had, and you know. I hope the voters at some point stop tolerating all this nonsense.
Arizona Daily Star, allowing guns on campuses of all universities, really, and college, community colleges campuses, really hides the bad guys. Sarah?
Yeah, my colleague Jane C. White wrote that, and on behalf of the editorial board at the Star. And what we're thinking is we agree with a lot of the university presidents and the faculty senate that have come out against the notion of that we should allow students, faculty to carry weapons on to school campuses, because as it is now, if you're an instructor or a student and you see someone with a weapon, you know that they're there for no good reason, and that it's a danger, and that something's wrong. If you have everyone in a class, or three people, or whoever, carrying weapons on campus, and I'm an instructor, and I see someone has a gun in their backpack, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that they're going to do something bad. It doesn't mean they're going to not do something bad. There's no way to judge the situation. And when you have a classroom environment with one instructor and a bunch of students, you really do need to know, because those situations can get a little heated if you're having a class discussion or someone's upset about a grade or something. You need to know the situation and what to expect. And if everyone has weapons, there's no way to know what to look out for.
Mark?
Yeah, I've been uncertain what opinion I have on this bill that would allow guns into public places, because if someone wants to take a gun onto campus and they're a bad actor, they're taking that gun there to do harm to somebody, they're going to do it irrespective of this law. So will this law really change anything? Will there be this sudden rush of students packing heat or instructors or whoever on campus? I doubt it. I think we're all really hypersensitive to the issue of guns, and rightfully so, because of what happened here. We had a tragic shooting, and it's not the first one. It happens repeatedly. We've had several in this city, and there's been several across the country. And as long as we have the Second Amendment, we're always going to have this debate, and I just haven't been able to figure out what the right course of action is. I don't think having, you know, people just carrying guns everywhere makes us any safer, but at the same time, I don't think it makes them necessarily bad people.
Jim Nitzel, you have a nice piece in the Tucson Weekly, really articulating not just about the guns, but really some of this legislation, Al Melvin's, the Pierce omnibus bill that throws everything in there, I guess, that he'd tried to get pushed forward over the last 5 or 6 years. Give us a few highlights.
Well, first on the guns thing, let me just say that I am definitely going to have to change the way I approach my students in the future. I'm going to have to really treat them a whole lot better than I'm treating them today. A whole lot of crazy legislation continues to move through the legislature. we're following it all online at our website at the range. But you know, these bills that do things like completely eliminate Medicare got out last week. There were bills that eliminated Board of Regents that got out last week. What's that, Bill?
Eliminate Medicaid.
Eliminate Medicaid. I'm sorry. You're right. Eliminate Medicaid.
I don't want folks listening to panic here and think
Right. The state wouldn't have the authority to do that. But certainly the elimination of Medicaid would be something even the governor's office came out and pointed out that's going to cost the state $7 billion in matching funds, cause skyrocketing unemployment, devastate our health care system, and lead to doctors leaving the state. So that's one of the ones that, you know, you just shake your head when you see something like that pass. It's, you just wonder what any of these guys are thinking. It's so amazingly irresponsible. You know, there's bills that would cause, you know, random drug testing of welfare recipients, bills that would require hospitals to check immigration status of patients before admitting them, all sorts of just, I think what it is all this stuff has been bottled up for decades, really, when you've had more reasonable people up there who have stopped this stuff from going through, and the folks that like this stuff see an opportunity here to ram it through in the next 2 years, and they're going to take every chance they have to do that.
There are some encouraging signs, though. I mean, the nullification bill, there was one bill that nullified federal laws, that because Arizona is a sovereign state, that if Arizona doesn't like what the federal government's doing, it can nullify that law, which was something that South Carolina tried back in 1860, and that didn't go so well for them. And that bill died in committee, although it could come back as a striker. So some of the insanity is being curtailed a little bit, but other stuff is continuing to go through. For instance, the Arizona Breathes bill managed to continue to go through. So somehow...
Arizona what?
Oh, it's Breathe. I forget what
Freedom
it's called.
To
it's
breathe Act.
Freedom to Breathe Act, right, which basically says the EPA can't regulate Arizona's air because it's Arizona's air, it's not New Mexico's air, and the federal government doesn't have the authority to regulate Arizona polluters because the air stops at the border somehow.
Of course it does, right. With the invisible walls.
And that one actually originally was just focused on greenhouse gases and got amended to include particulate matter as well.
That's
so
dust.
They're not only worried about making sure the feds don't regulate the greenhouse gases with global warming. They actually don't want them to regulate pollution at all because, as Sandy Barr of the Sierra Club put it, evidently we have too much clean air right now.
Yeah, don't tread on my dust.
How's our friend Senator Melvin doing and Senator Antinori?
Well, you know, Senator Melvin is voting in favor of all that stuff I was discussing earlier that slid right through the Appropriations Committee meeting last week, and I think Senator Melvin, actually we have a guest opinion from Councilman Steve Kosachik, the only Republican on the council, who's really going after Frank Antinori in this week's Weekly, and he's been doing that in the Star and in Green Valley News, other places around town, and we'll speak quite freely to you if you have him on the show, who will, you know, I'd say, you know, this is ridiculous. These guys need to quit meddling in our affairs, and it's kind of interesting to see two very strong personalities starting to, like, pick a fight with each other here.
Well, they're welcome on the show. Just give my producer, Rosemary Brandt, a call, Senator Melvin or Senator Antinori. You're welcome anytime. Sarah, the classroom spending dropped a record low. You've been talking about education. The bad news continues to get worse, doesn't it, on that front?
It does. And I'm sorry, I just can't help but sort of laugh at yet again. We have bad news about education. It just never seems to end. But one thing, what happened was the state auditor general did a report, as it does, looking at the number of dollars, the percentage of dollars of state money that ends up in what they determined to be classroom instruction. And they found that last year it was 55.9% of every dollar ended up in classroom instruction. The rest went to transportation, administrative costs, things like that. Nationally, it's 60%, and so we are below the national average in the amount, the percentage of dollars that we spend on education that actually end up, according to this criteria, in the classroom. We should also point out that we're well below, $2,500 below the national average of education spending. Period, and per student. And so
But the interesting thing is, yes, you can say this is a terrible outrage. More dollars need to be going into the classroom, which is undoubtedly true. But we should also point out that the way the Auditor General's office tracks spending isn't necessarily everything to do with the education of a kid. It doesn't include things like school nurses, psychologists, things, entities and people and functions in a school that really do make a difference in how a kid is able to learn. So I think it's gives a slightly skewed picture. But the bottom line is, as a state, Arizona does not spend nearly enough on public education.
Okay, we're going to have to... Mark, I hate to cut you off real quickly.
No, it's okay. I can't do anything quickly.
Oh, you can't? No, yes or no. Jim Nintzel, thank you for being with us, Jim.
Always a pleasure.
Look forward to having you live in studio with us next week. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway, on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger, the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. We've got Weekend Watch, What's Going On This Weekend, with Matt Russell coming up next. It's now about 52 minutes past the hour.
The world sees it rise when I gave the word. Now in the
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. Fifty-five minutes past the hour, that music always signals, heralds the Weekend Watch on the Buckmaster Show. Each Friday morning, we are joined by Matt Russell, host of the weekly radio show On the Menu Live, which airs Thursday afternoons at 5 here on KJLL. Matt, how you doing?
Having a great start to the weekend. I mean, it's Friday morning. I wish I could just take the rest of the day off, Bill. I'm so excited about what we have in store.
I know you've got a lot going on. Saturday, there's all sorts of stuff for the wine lovers, and there are quite a few out there, I would assume.
Absolutely. We've got a rich Southern Arizona wine enthusiast group here in town, and I want to encourage all of your listeners to go see my friend Yvonne Fouché, who runs a great little store called Catavinos Wine Shop and Tasting Room, which is over on Alvernon, just south of Fort Lowell. And Saturday from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., she's going to be hosting a wonderful California wine tasting. And she's paired up a flight of six premium wines from all across the Golden State. And she's paired those up with some wonderful cheese. And you'll have the opportunity to taste six wines for only $10. And if you buy a bottle of wine, she'll drop that price down to $8. The wonderful thing about Catavinos, Bill, is of all the 350 wines she stocks there in her store, there's not one bottle that's over $15.
You're kidding.
So she really does all the heavy lifting for us. She goes all across the world, finds the best wine values, brings them back for us to enjoy, and she does it that's really in a way that's affordable for everybody.
350 wines. That is amazing. One of my favorite holidays is coming up because the Buckmaster is half English, and then the Regans, he's half Irish. So my mom being a first-generation Irish-American, of course, St. Patrick's Day is very important to Bill Buckmaster, and we've got some great Irish food on tap this weekend.
Indeed. Super Bowl, really, for the Irish-American community. You can already start smelling the corned beef this Sunday, Bill, from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. on the patio of Maynard's Market and Kitchen is a great Irish cook-off. They're going to be putting together nine celebrated local chefs from across southern Arizona to compete in various categories, corned beef, soda bread, Irish stew, and a host of Irish-themed desserts. This is a great event for the Irish, really, and everybody. Aaron Gubra and all that stuff, I can start smelling the corned beef now.
Now, the corned beef, for me, okay, but the big thing, the comfort thing, the soda bread. Oh, what I love... right out of the oven right now, a slice of soda bread, soak it in butter, put a little jam on it. Oh, man, that would be good.
Oh, I don't think there's anything that doesn't taste better soaked in butter. I think that's a Buckmaster first, right?
It is.
On the Buckmaster show.
There you go. What's this about a new Baggins opening in town? That's coming up.
Brand new Baggins, kind of Baggins Gourmet, kind of taking what we all think about Baggins, great gourmet sandwiches, and really have taken it up a whole nother notch. They have moved into the Williams Center there on Broadway. We're going to be broadcasting On the Menu live next Thursday at 5 o'clock right from the new Baggins to get a sense from these folks how they have reinvented and redefined the sandwich here in southern Arizona. And really, to call it a sandwich is almost a misnomer because what they're doing between two slices of bread is extraordinary.
What about On the Menu live as far as your website? We have not talked about that here on the Buckmaster Show.
I appreciate that. www.onthemenulive.com. You will be able to listen to all of our shows, get a sense of where we're going to be broadcasting from each and every week, and sign up for our weekly newsletter, and really suggest wonderful restaurants and bars and lounges where you'd like to see us broadcast our
Quickly running out of time, Matt, but we had Karen Ulick as our Friday Focus newsmaker. We're talking about downtown, and really the restaurant scene leading the way, isn't it, downtown?
Absolutely. It's a renaissance in that part of the community that I've been waiting 30 years for. And now, finally, I think we can all share this excitement, this energy that downtown is becoming that kind of destination for food and entertainment and action. And this is something that that I just can't say enough about.
Matt Russell, we are delighted to have you here every Friday. Thank you so much.
Have a great weekend, Bill.
Thank you, Matt Russell. That is going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show on this Friday. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, on behalf of Team Buckmaster, the always lovely producer, Rosemary Brandt, and equally as lovely marketing director, the very talented team of Brandt and Deborah Howard. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend.
Tucson Jolt.
Having heard from all of you, it seems only fair, doesn't it, that you should now hear from all of me.
KJLL, South Tucson.